Hello and welcome to our 74th episode of the Gutenberg Changelog podcast. In today's episode, we will talk about Gutenberg 14.2 and 14.3 plugin releases, WordPress 6.1, release candidate, style variations in the theme directory as a beta, a developer course on Gutenberg data layer, and so much more. I'm Birgit Pauli Haag, curator at the Gutenberg Times and WordPress developer advocate. And my guest today is Dave Smith, a JavaScript engineer and full-time core contributor on the Gutenberg project, sponsored by Automattic. Good afternoon, Dave. Thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Hi, Birgit. Yeah, I'm doing really well, thank you. And it's great to be able to join you on the show again.
Well, although you have been a guest on the Changelog before, we always get new listeners. And so maybe you could tell us briefly about yourself and what you're working on at the moment.
Yeah, sure. I'm a developer living from and working in England, in the United Kingdom. And as you mentioned before, I'm sponsored by Automattic and I work full time on the Gutenberg project. So my primary focus tends to be the navigation project, which I've been on for the 6.1 cycle. And that's now encompassing all aspects of managing navigation in the editor, including the nav block. I also run a YouTube channel, which is Dave on WP, where I post regular videos on all aspects of the block editor. And most recently, I've been working on an overview video for all the key features coming to WordPress 6.1. So if anyone would like to check that out, then they can have a look at the channel, which is youtube.com/c/DaveOnWP. And I'm sure we'll have a link in the show notes.
Yeah, of course, we do put a link in the show notes. So yeah, and I found great videos about your work on the navigation block there. They were very helpful, kind of getting into the problem space and why it's all so difficult to solve. And also, so thanks for putting them together.
No problem, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there was also another video. I watched your presentation that you gave to an agency team that is starting out adopting the block editor for their work. And they had some interesting questions for you. So what was your takeaway from the discussions with the group?
So that was the discussion I had with Corner Shop Creative, I believe. They were brilliant. They were such a great team. They had loads of questions. I think the Q&A ended up being longer than the actual presentation itself, actually.
It's a good thing.
But yeah, yes, it was a good thing. I always think it's a good sign. But that team they really fully embraced the block editor, but they're butting up against some of the same problems we hear a lot about styling and, you know, curation of content. An example that came up was this possibility of having a kind of synced block pattern, which could be updated with styling changes sort of after the fact, as you know. Once you insert a pattern, it's a one-time action. Once it's done, it's done. You can't go back and then update it. So every time the client wants to update their styles, they have to go through all of the instances of the pattern and update them. So you can see how that'd be a bit of a headache. So I don't see any really good way to deal with that yet, apart from kind of inheriting more of the styles from global styles instead of applying bespoke ones to the pattern itself. But it's certainly a tricky problem. Anyway, yeah. It kind of illustrates that we still have some ways to go to solve all these sort of real world use cases that folks are running up against.
Updating prior work was actually a pain point that I also heard at WordCamp Europe as well as WordCamp US, where it's not only the pattern, but it's also when you have a theme that was modified, the template was modified, the theme, when the theme is updated through a theme shop, the user doesn't get the new templates, because they override it through their user style. So that's also a good problem to solve. Because if they update the template, and although it was changed by the user, they are not getting the new features in there, whatever it's in there. So it's kind of a tricky bit there. Yeah, so yeah, you mentioned it. Let's discuss WordPress 6.1 release cycle for a bit before we head into the Gutenberg plugin releases. Do you want to kind of start out with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've had the RC1 on the 11th of October, 2022. We're recording on the 14th, I think, today. So, it's time to perform those final reviews and get testing on that. As usual, we don't recommend running this on a production or mission critical website. I think we all know that by now, but just in case. And we've got the final release of this 6.1 is going to be out on the 1st of November 2022, all being well.
Yeah, there are some people who say, well, I'm not going to update until 6.1.1 is out, but yeah, I hear they are. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's absolutely loads of changes in this release. I think there's some stat of like 1,700 PRs merged or something like that. So there's absolutely a load of features coming down the line, but also bug fixes and tooling and testing changes. I think it's going to be a really strong release. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there are countless changes for the content creators, yeah. And we talked about those in the last six or seven episodes, but when we discussed the Gutenberg plugin releases, but so almost all features from the plugin releases 13.1 through 14.1 will make it or made it into the WordPress 6.1. It's already, as you said, in release candidate. So feature freeze was beta one. Release candidate one is actually string freeze. So the army of polyglot contributors that translate all the new things coming to WordPress between now and the final release can be sure that they don't have to do it again when there are additional string changes there. So that's string free. So it's pretty clear. So there are three things that didn't make it in there. As I discovered, there was a zoom out window. The table of contents block is not in 6.1, and also the theme support for the appearance tool for classic themes. That didn't make it into 6.1. They need some more testing or some more refinement before it goes out to millions of users. And I just realized that 6.0, WordPress 6.0, was already downloaded 100 million times. Yeah,
Wow.
so the counter resets in about a month, no, about 2 weeks, but for 6.1, but then we know the final number. So the field guide for WordPress 6.1 has been published, and I counted 19 developer notes about the block editor and block-based themes. That's double the amount of the developer notes for 6.0. There's also a separate field guide for performance update from the performance team. Awesome work there, and also a separate post that lists all the accessibility changes coming to WordPress 6.1 by Anne McCarthy, and I think she lists about 50 different changes that were coming. So, Dave, what are the features that you're most excited about this release?
Oh, there's so much. I've just been going through all these changes for WordPress 6.1 actually, and there's just so many great things. But I think probably the biggest thing that I think people will notice when they download 6.1 for the first time is just how many more design tools are available across the blocks in 6.1. There's been a big push throughout the 6.1 cycle to sort of roll out all the standardized tools for blocks for things like color, typography, layout, spacing, and that kind of thing. And I think now that's really kind of coming to fruition. I think we're only 50% of the way through all the blocks, apparently. I read the last ticket, but it's surprising what a difference that makes compared to 6.0.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And I actually put I'm so excited about it. I put a table together with all the core blocks. Yeah. And so you can see all the core blocks and then typography, color controls, dimension controls, border controls, and layer controls. And then you see which block has what. So that's in the dev notes as well.
Oh, that
What
sounds
else?
brilliant. Yeah, I have to look that up. Yeah, well, the other thing I wanted to have a talk about was the something that I think will help increase adoption rates for block editing, and that's the ability to utilize and edit template parts in classic themes. And it kind of first time I heard it, I thought, oh, what's the point of that? It sounds a bit strange. But actually, I found that it affords a lot of power because what it enables you to do is things like make your header or your footer fully editable whilst not requiring your users to have to sort of fully deal with and embrace the full site editor experience. So I was testing this out and I had a go at converting the 2020 theme to allow me to be able to edit the footer. And it was so easy to do, but yet it opened up such a like an amazing thing, because normally if you want to edit just something as simple as the text and the footer, you'd have to like create an option and create a new setting in your theme and do all that sort of thing. And now you can just go in, edit the footer text, click save, and it's done. And so actually I think it's a bigger win than you might expect when you hear that for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And Justin Tadlock actually did a little tutorial when he did the same thing that you did. I think he converted the 20, no, he converted the 2021 to a with some block ports and had a hero image of the header and all that. So that is actually published several weeks ago at the Gutenberg Times
Oh,
website.
great.
So I will add that link also to the show notes. But it goes really through the whole problems that he encountered also with CSS, because sometimes, yeah, you need to update the things and that's expected, but also how little there was to update. So it was and he also added a few patterns to it and how you can do that. So that's a great tutorial if you want to check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Justin's article is always really good, isn't it? So I'll definitely be looking at that. There's one more thing actually I want to call out, if I may. And this one is, I think, has kind of flown slightly under the radar in this release, but it's actually the syncing of editor preferences across devices. So, I mean, you'll be familiar that you can do things like set the persistent list view, or you want top toolbar mode within the editor. But in 6.0, these rules just save locally to the device you were on. So if you went and then switched to a new device, all those changes would be lost. You'd have to reapply those preferences, which is kind of annoying. So with 6.1, however, they've now updated it so the changes are saved to the database. So that means that they're going to apply across all your devices. So if you're at work and you set, top toolbar mode at work, you come home, log onto your home laptop, and it's going to be exactly the same there. So it's a nice quality of life improvement there. And big shout out to Daniel Richards, who really spearheaded all the work in that
I think there will be a sigh of relief for millions of block
area.
editor users that have said,
Exactly.
"Yeah, I know the welcome guide. Yeah, go away. Let me go on with my work." Yeah, but
Absolutely, yeah.
it's really a great. But I also feel that it's the right time to actually implement that, because now the full range of preference tools is actually known, and then also kind of figure out, okay, how all these editor, being the site editor, being the post editor, yeah, how they handle those preference tools before you actually put it persistently in the database. I think that's a good, the local storage was a good solution for interim, yeah, but now that it's in a database, now plugins and others can actually also know about that and help them modify that. So for developers in 6.1, there are great improvements on the controls for theme JSON, of course, yeah, the typography and border controls and color for links coming also there. But the most important thing that I feel is the query loop block extensions, that a developer can now create a block variation for the query loop block and define with the attributes the customization of the list of posts, custom post types or pages. And so theme developers working on more complex sites will hopefully make good use of that. I think the ease of style variations for theme developers is also that you can use them for classic themes. No, we talked about that. Yeah, style variations for the block themes are definitely good coming to 6.1. There were actually for 6.0 already there. The default theme has it, but the default theme now is actually a base theme and now has 10 variations built from the community that come with a default theme. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing thing, that 2023 theme. I think 30 something like 38 contributions, and ended up being with 10 different variations. Amazing, like a new way of sort of generating default themes for WordPress. I think it's really points to the future.
And I'm not sure, if we should just kind of keep that default theme, kind of change the name to default theme and just add variations
Yeah,
every year.
there's variations now. Yeah.
And do a shout out to the community and say, okay, now it's time to show us the best variations, and then we add it to the theme or something like that. I also
Yeah, let's
saw
see.
theme developers that submitted quite a few style variations, built a child theme, and submitted that to the repository with their style variations in it. So you get, even if the design team just selected 10 of them, you get to see even more style variations for it. So it's definitely quite some creativity going on in the community about that. So, which brings us to the our community contributions kind of section of the site. Dave, you brought some with us. What do
Yeah,
you
I
want to
found
shout out?
quite a few community contributions this week, actually. So the first one I want to chat about is client-side WebAssembly WordPress with no server. It's sort of a clickbaity title if I ever heard one. But this was a post on Make blog by Adam Zielinski. And what it is what it says on tin. It's WordPress running completely in the browser with no web server whatsoever. And probably most of your listeners will be familiar with WordPress. Traditionally, you have a web server and your browser sends, when you click on something like posts, it's going to send a request to that server and the server is going to respond with the answer. But of course, if something happens, like you go offline, then the server, you can't reach the server anymore and therefore your site doesn't work. And that's always how WordPress has worked. What Adam's done is been very, very clever, and he's used a technology called WebAssembly, which is a low-level assembly-like language similar to C or C++ or whatever. And basically what he's done is he's taken the PHP that comprises the WordPress software, compiled it down to WebAssembly, packaged it up in a bundle, and then run it completely in the browser. Then any requests that go out that would normally go out to WordPress get trapped by a service worker, and it reroutes them to this in-browser version of WordPress. Sounds all very, very clever, and it kind of think, oh, well, you know, great experiment. But it's actually got some real world opportunities there, I think, especially around learning WordPress in the browser. I don't know if you saw that post, Birgit.
Oh, yeah, I actually reviewed it and had some questions for Adam before he published it. And I also tested some of the things. So it's really amazing. And I can imagine, yeah, the opportunities are probably endless. Yeah. But definitely when you have tutorial type posts, yeah, you can add that to it. And people can then in real time make some changes to the code that they're just learning or just reading about, and then see how it impacts a website without having to spin up their own local, without any build tools, without any downloading of Gutenberg or something like that to see that all happening. And so it's a much faster way to learn and see how things working instead of and then figure out how you add it to your own code. So I hope. And I saw Adam in between announcing. I ran into some browser freezes and browser because the bundle, of course, is also pretty big. Yeah,
yes.
If you have downloaded WordPress before, it's about 4 or 5 megabit. Yeah, and if you load that in a browser and in the memory of your local system, it kind of you need some heavy lifting there. And if you do some more, it kind of poops out on you, so to speak.
I mean, that's definitely why I think, you know, this is a first sort of prototype, but I know Adam and colleagues are sort of looking for people to start contributing and trying to make this more practical and real world usage. So if anyone is interested in that, then the link to that post will be in the show notes for this episode. I'm also going to be diving into the topic a little bit greater detail with Adam on my YouTube channel, so if anyone's interested in that, so
excellent.
We can subscribe and see that video at some point.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Yeah. So another community contribution is actually that the Meta team just released a beta version of displaying style variation in the theme directory. There's a track ticket that was opened by Carolina Niemark, a full site editing expert, if you need one. And so you can browse examples with a 2022 theme. I put the link in there. So the developer, Steve Dufresne, commented on the ticket. So to turn on the feature, add _beta-style_variations to the URL. And then the URL gets updated when you browse themes. So you'll need to re-add that string, however, for each theme page to reload. So what I really like is that it's now an increase of interactivity on the theme directory to help site owners to decide which theme they want to take. And every time you click on the little style variation card underneath the screenshot actually changes into displaying that style variation on the screenshot. So it's quite fascinating. And I've spent quite some time browsing themes that already have style version variations in there. So if you don't see a style variation, probably the theme doesn't have some. So you find the best way. I saw maybe 6 or 7 themes in there, but I, of course, I didn't browse all 160 block themes anymore. But yeah, try it out. I put the link to the track ticket into the show notes so you can also see the string that you need to add there, and a link to the 2022 theme so you can see all the style variations without downloading it. Yeah, let me know what you think about it. Yeah, I'm totally stoked about that.
Yeah, sounds really good. Well, the more themes that we're adding these style variations, the more we're going to need to have stuff like that in the theme directory. So, yeah, great to see that happening. One more thing, community contributions this week is a new course on learn.wordpress, which is the official sort of tutorial site for WordPress. And this is a new course on WordPress data layer, and specifically the Gutenberg data layer. So for those who don't know, the data layer is used throughout the block editor to read and write data. So for example, if you need a list of posts, or you want to create a new post, edit a post, you're going to need to use the data layer at some point. And really, that means it's essential learning if you want to make anything more than the most basic of blocks. So this is a full course which covers not only the basics of the data layer, but also best practices and some more advanced usages. I know the author, again, it's Adam Zielinski, who's been prolific recently, and he's extremely knowledgeable on this topic. So I'm confident it'll be a great investment for anyone who's got the time to look at that course. And the link again is going to be in the show notes.
Yeah, it's a great for any developer who has ambition in that. Yeah, definitely requires an advanced JavaScript and React knowledge to get through that course. But
Yes.
not everybody is there yet. So very soon, hopefully in
Yes.
the upcoming weeks, there's an introduction to block development course coming up. And it gets you from almost zero to block building a real life example, like a multi-column block. When you have a text and then it kind of distributes itself over the of multiple columns. So yeah, this is the Adam Zielinski fan show because Adam Zielinski also sent in, I think, three dev notes on Monday that we kind of were able to put in the field guide. So there's definitely some great work on for developers in the works. Or
Absolutely.
in 6.1. All right, so that brings us to the Gutenberg plugin releases 14.2 and 14.3. Let's start with 14.2. Release lead was Michał Czablinski, who also published a release post on Make Blog, and of course, another show note link. It entailed about 80 PRs, 15 enhancements, 24 bug fixes amongst them, and some of them even made it into the release candidate 6.1 that were backported to the core. It's a fairly small release though compared to the last two releases. I remember 14.1 had over 383 PRs.
Yeah, it's not quite that big.
that was quite epic, but of course, yeah, there was a rush to get all the features in that make the feature freeze of beta 1. And then, nevertheless, the great enhancements made it into the plugin. And Dave, what are the key features that were merged in the plugin?
Yeah, so for 14.2, we had smarter pattern suggestions for the query loop block variations. We've got improvements to the writing flow, a more polished calendar block, new banners and footers block pattern categories, and auto completion for links is now in all blocks.
Well, that sounds terrific. So let's discuss them one at a time. So there's also letter spacing for the global styles. So you can now, for the heading, and you can now put them in the theme JSON file to have not only letter spacing, but also font family selection and the other typography, which is letter line height, case for the headings, like sentence case or title case or no case at all. So that's all for the headings. And I think the letter spacing didn't make it into 6.1. The others you find in the headings. Yeah.
We've also got another PR, which is switching us to using numbers instead of t-shirt sizing for labels for spacing presets. So if you're changing something like padding or margin, there's a little slider and you can slide between like small, medium, large, extra large. That was deemed to be too complex potentially and had some accessibility concerns. So they've reverted to just numbers. So 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which is
Oh,
kind of
okay.
nice and
Yeah,
simple.
simply, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's another quality of life change that made it into, and that is hiding the floating block UI when typing. it was always going away, but it now also hides the inserter, so there is no kind of distraction coming up when you type on a paragraph block or in any other blocks for that matter. I think that's really important because that's one of the big concerns for writers, that there is so much distraction, especially when they start out. Yeah, every time they move the mouse, something appears and then there's gone until they see what it was. And it's kind of a disconcerting sometimes for writers when they start out with the block editor. So I like that.
Yes.
The color block also got now color support in 14.2 and polished styles, which is nice because I think the color block, calendar block, color block. Sorry, let's do that again.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Calendar block got now color support and polished style. And I'm really happy that the calendar block got some more love now because I think that's the first change since the beginning of the last 5 years since the calendar block actually made it into the block editor. So that's just really cool.
Yeah, that's nice to see. Under patterns, we've also got new categories, as I mentioned, for banners and footers. The reason we've got those is because we've already got this sort of headers category for patterns, but that was really intended for more global elements that might be at the top of your site. But unfortunately, people were sort of putting in things like what you might call a hero section, sort of a standout call out within the flow of the page. And there wasn't really the right place to put it. So to disambiguate those, they've created a new pattern category called banners, and you can put all your hero sections in there as you wish. There's also another one called footers. I think that does what it says on the tin. It's just complementary to headers, really.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And those are the perfect candidate for actually classic themes to use in their themes is the headers and footers. But the pattern category is something, it's a little bit different, but there are also template parts that go with that. And isn't there a semantic recognizing that if there's somebody edits the footer or the header, they get the respective category of patterns for choices in the editor. So I think that
Yes.
was also a reason, definitely for the footer pattern category. So the footer template part can have their own patterns.
Yes, to suggest the most appropriate pattern for you. Yeah, that sounds like a good reason for that change.
Another change was the link auto-completer that is enabled for the blocks. It's just a, is that the, oh, right. We talked about that. That's the bracket bracket autocompleter where it shows you just put in bracket bracket in the paragraph and in the list block and now in all blocks and you get a choice of the latest published posts or pages that you have on your site. That's a very fast way to do inner links on your site, which actually help you with SEO as well, but also keep your reader on the site. So this is a great tool to do that.
Yeah, it's good to see that in all blocks now, not just the paragraph block, especially with the new list and quote blocks having inner blocks. So that's quite important there.
Yeah, and it was missing from the list block actually
Yes.
until, and I use that quite a bit on the Gutenberg Times, the list block where I have just a list of links, and all of a sudden it didn't work anymore. So guess what I
Yeah.
did? I
Oh, I
find an
can
issue.
guess. So next up, we're on to the block library section, and there's been quite a number of enhancements to blocks. The main one is the query loop block now suggests patterns based on the active variation. So for this one, imagine if you have a query loop block, you might register a variation for it with something like listing out a list of products from your product's custom post type. But that variation itself can also register patterns. So you might have a pattern, which is the list layout, and then another pattern, which is list products in a grid. So you've got those two patterns. So what happens now is when you insert your products list variation, it will suggest to you those two patterns that the variation is registered. So it's like surfacing the most appropriate pattern for your query loop variation. And that's quite powerful for things like e-commerce sites and things like that. So you're not getting loads and loads of patterns you have to pick from that are completely irrelevant to the type of query loop you're inserting.
Yeah, it's one of the features that quite a few agencies really love because they can narrow down the customization that a user can do and be very strict in certain things, but give a little bit of freedom. That also pairs with the locking features that come with the content locking features that come with 6.1. I know I'm jumping back and forth, but it all comes together in one thing. So, and that it will be it's the site editor kind of thing. Yeah. So, yeah. There also it was a great writing flow fix for it. Then now when you partial select between blocks, now you can drag it again, which wasn't possible before. So.
Yeah, you kind of had when you were dragging from one across a number of blocks, it would have this sort of strange effect where it would go back to showing you the first block you'd dragged. So if you had a sidebar open as you were dragging between the blocks, it would flash between the first block and then the multi-select, the first block and the multi-select. And now what happens is just when you click on the first block, you drag, and the toolbar and everything around it stays based on the first block that you selected. It's a small change you probably wouldn't notice, but if you were doing a lot of multi-selection with, especially with drag and click and drag, you would definitely notice it flickering back and forth. It was really, really distracting. So that's just another nice quality of life improvement there.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. Cool.
Another one was when you're creating templates in the editor, under the template screen. Previously, you could accidentally, if you were a bit overzealous with your clicking, you might create a number of templates because you could just repeatedly click the create button for any of the templates. So yeah, people were ending up with sort of like five versions of the one template, and I'm just thinking, well, how did that happen? I only clicked once. So now, yeah, we've fixed that, so that's not possible to do that anymore.
Yeah, that's definitely a nice fix there, because it's disconcerting for anybody who has that. And then the last one for 14.2.
Yes, under testing we have under Storybook. Now this is quite interesting. They've set up a new development aid which adds visual regression testing to the components in Storybook. So components are like the low level UI components that we use to build the editor as a whole, not just blocks, but everything as a whole. And Storybook sort of showcases those in one place. And what they've done is they set up a sort of a visual diffing tool. So you run the test, it takes a screenshot of your component at a point in time. And then the next time you run the tests, it takes another screenshot and says, is this different to the previous one? And if a certain threshold of difference is passed, then it flags up and says, this test has failed. And then a human comes along and looks at it. And I thought it caught my eye because I thought, wow, this could be something that we could extrapolate out to maybe other parts of the editor, like actual blocks themselves, because with the best world in the world, you can have sort of all sorts of end-to-end tests and unit tests and all sorts of things like that. But at the end of the day, a lot of things are visual changes that only a human can notice. So if we've got this sort of extra sort of step of automation picking up on these things, it might help. Currently, this is only running locally. It's not running on sort of continuous integration on GitHub, but maybe in the future, someone could take that and run with it, and maybe it could help.
That's a really great idea. I think that is something that developers who learn how to work with the block editor definitely can use that in their local development into figuring out, okay, what changed now? Yeah, what did I do wrong in the debugging parts? So they don't need to look at the console first when they see something like that, yeah, and they build visual regression into their own components that are based on the Storybook components. Yeah. So we are at the end of the Gutenberg plugin version 14.2. What did Gutenberg 14.3 bring to us? That
Well,
was,
but
go ahead.
so 14.3, we had release lead Aaron Robshaw, and he's posted the What's New in Gutenberg 14.3 post on Make Blog. And WP Tavern have also covered this in Gutenberg 14.3 improves image drag and drop. And those links will be in the show notes. Let's take a look at the change log. What have we got first here, Birgit?
Oh, we got first up is the include and after the post author block now includes an option to link actually to the author archive. And this is definitely something that was, it's a small tweak and it was probably a good first issue, but it's definitely helping a lot of sites that have multiple authors to use it in the templates. And also because then you also can, so you have an author archive, and then you can, when you template that, you can also, there was one change in one of the other plugins that you can actually add the description that comes from the user database about the bios, put it on
Yeah.
top. So you have the author, you have the description, and then the list of all the blocks that now you can do link to that page from each post. Then you add the post author block to the post template. It's a lot of templates and blocks.
Well, I can see it being, I can see that's a small change, but I think it's like pretty handy for sites that produce a lot of content. I suppose like the Gutenberg Times, in fact, would be one example of that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
The next change we've got is we're now using the tools panel in global styles. The typography panel is quite complex. As we've mentioned before, it's got things like letter spacing, case, all sorts of things you can change on typography these days. And what it's doing is now bringing the global styles interface into line with the typography interface that appears in blocks. So if you need to reset all the changes that you've made to typography across the entire site on sort of like a heading block, it's now really easy to do that through a standard interface, which is a nice win there.
Excellent. Yeah. And now the feature that was grabbing the attention of Sarah Gooding at the WP Tavern is to allow an image to drop into an empty paragraph block and to create an image block. I think I kind of intuitively thought that was already possible, but
Yeah.
maybe I just dragged it between blocks. But so now you can you every time you just hit enter on a at the end of one block, you can just drag your image into an empty paragraph, and it adds it to the site.
Yeah, I expect there's probably instances where sort of container blocks have a paragraph block as the default. So now you can just drop an image into that. That's probably why it helps a lot as well. So yeah, nice little enhancement there.
That's great. Yeah, especially for the cover block. Yeah, and group block, I can see that. Yeah,
Yeah.
and the next one.
The next one is improvements to the writing flow. We're now implementing sort of standardized controls that sort of feel quite natural when you compare them with other text editors. So you can now hold down the Alt key and use the arrow keys to jump around between in blocks of text. So an example given is if your cursor is towards the end of a long paragraph, you can press Alt and up arrow to move straight back to the beginning of that paragraph, and similarly, Alt down arrow will move you to the end of that block of text. And these are all like small little tweaks to the writing flow, but it does allow you to move quickly around text and brings Gutenberg into line with many other normal text editors.
I think this was very missed for those who use other text editors too, because it kind of throws you when you when your shift or control and left arrow doesn't get you to the end to the beginning of the line, and you need to use the mouse to get there. So yeah, I really love that writing to writing flow improvement there. So the next one, it's the WP HTML tag processor. I think you need to explain to me and our listeners what that actually does, Dave.
I'll give it a good go. Yes, this is a sort of technical change, but one is important for people who are working with dynamic blocks. So often dynamic blocks are the ones that use PHP to output the content to the front of the site because they've got some sort of dynamic requirements, so they have to list a post or grab your, I don't know, post site logo or something like that. In fact, the site logo is a good example because there's an attribute to control whether the site logo should be a link or not. And if it isn't going to be a link, then we need some way to strip out the sort of anchor tag from the resulting HTML. And before this processor was added, we had to do this with what's called regular expressions, which are notoriously unreliable for parsing and modifying HTML. And this was happening across a number of blocks, and the use cases were getting ever more complex, especially around things like using the post featured image in the markup of the cover block, for example. So what we've done here is we've added this HTML tag processor, which is a very like standardized way to walk through the HTML of a given block and then allow you to make common modifications to it, such as adding or removing class names. Seems like a small thing, but actually unlocks many doors and greatly simplifies working with blocks, not only for core blocks like cover, gallery, and heading, but of course, third-party blocks can also take advantage of this now and avoid having to write lots of regex, which of course no one likes doing, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that because it improves so much the developer experience for the block editor, and it's such a nice tool to be a little bit more secure about what you're changing, and if something else is in there, does it screw up your edit or your plugin, for instance, or the block. Yeah, so yeah, I'm really looking forward to the dev note for that. It won't come until 6.2, and we don't know yet what the planning is for next year, but I know that the leadership is working on all the things that come with 6.2, or so we will soon have some information about that. But yes, this is definitely, try it out. It's in plugin 14.3, so the team definitely would need some feedback on that to see if it actually lives up to its expectation.
Yes.
And then yeah, we have some more changes in the block library, and one is the also for the image, and the team fixed the crop area aspect ratio for when you rotate an image and you crop it, that it keeps the aspect ratio for it. So it's a nice change, and it keeps you a little bit more safe when you do cropping on your images.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one is another fix and is for link colors in some theme context, specifically 2022. There was an issue whereby if an ancestor of the navigation block set a link color, then it would override any text color set on the navigation block, which is really, really confusing because say you had a, I don't know, a green link color set on your, on a parent root block. And you had red text color set on your navigation, you'd be seeing the green color in the editor and thinking, well, what's happened? You wouldn't know where this color is coming from. Ended up being a temporary patch has been put in to basically increase the specificity of the CSS. But in the longer term, we're looking to migrate the nav block to use standardized color controls, but it's a lot more complex than you'd imagine. But yeah, if you've been experiencing that problem in your theme, then you hopefully shouldn't have that problem anymore as of 14.3.
And that problem was on both ends, editor and front end.
Yes.
Yeah, good, the fix. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a next one, which is to re-add styles that were removed from classic themes. Why would we remove styles from classic themes, you ask? Well, obviously it was an accident. Basically, a lot of the core styles have been moved to theme JSON so that we can parse them programmatically. But in doing so, some of the styles for buttons were lost and no longer output, which meant that classic themes had kind of blank buttons for a little bit. So now those are in a separate style sheet, and buttons are back looking nice again for classic themes by default.
And I'm just going through that. And yes, that had been ported back, I think, to, I'm not sure, is that ported back to WordPress 6.1? It looks like it, but I'm not
I
quite sure.
assumed that it had, if not, I think it has, yes, it has been backported to 6.1.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Yes.
Yes.
So 6.1 is not kind of having some backwards compatibility issues with classic themes. So that's definitely a good thing. Yeah, and then there were some quite a few code quality changes that update some of the tooling and linting code. Linting is when, oh, maybe you explain it better than I do, Dave.
It's just programmatically checking your code for common formatting changes. So you might, WordPress requires you to have a space around parentheses, for example. So it will automatically check those and fix them for you. That's linting.
Yeah, and the reason behind removing Lodash dependencies from some of the JavaScript, I think, was performance reasons, right? That it increased performance when you don't need to load Lodash for
Yeah,
the
Lodash
formatting.
is a fairly sizable library, so there's an effort underway to sort of completely remove that dependency, which should reduce the bundle size going to the editor, which is always a good thing.
Yeah. Speaking of tools, there's another. It's not a tool thing, yeah. Like there was quite a few discussions around the experimental APIs that made it into the WordPress code base. But now there is Adam Selinsky actually put a proposal together on how to limit that access. And this the first version of it is now available in the Gutenberg plugin. Do you have some more information behind that?
Yeah, so experimental APIs were quite controversial because Gutenberg does need to iterate and move quite quickly compared to core, for example. And so they often introduce experimental APIs and they're not guaranteed to be stable and might break at any time. But of course, some of these APIs were ending up going into a core WordPress release because they hadn't been stabilized at the point of that WordPress release. And that was understandably something that we didn't want to happen because WordPress has a commitment to backwards compatibility. So you can't really have experimental APIs going into a core release. So a way had to be found, like a middle ground had to be found between those two positions. One, that Gutenberg needs to iterate quickly. And number two, that core needs to not have breaking changes in it, which is entirely legitimate. So the way that this has been done now is, from now on, if Gutenberg wants to expose experimental APIs for use within its code base, it has to do so quite explicitly. You have to go through a number of quite laborious steps to do so, which is important. And number two, if you are a plugin developer and you choose to consume an experimental API, you also have to jump through a number of code hoops in order to do that. One of which actually requires you to type in manually a string of text which says something to the effect of, I know that using this experimental API will break my plugin on the next release, or something along those lines. But I mean, we laugh, but the point is that it's to educate people that, you know, if you do use this, it's kind of, it is at your own risk. And I like to think this is quite a nice sort of middle ground between the two positions, and hopefully we'll see it come to a fruition in the next couple of releases, as the current experimental APIs are stabilized and all future ones have to go through this sort of complex setup state in order to be exposed anyway.
Yeah, and it wouldn't so much be hard if only the Gutenberg plugin that it would use the experimental APIs, but I think because most plugin developers that are adopted Gutenberg block development also looked at the source code of the plugin and learned the core developer do that, and they use the experimental API in their own plugins for many, many years now. Yeah, kind of. So, and now that's really hard to deprecate. If it were just WordPress, yeah, using it, it would be easier to deprecate that because nobody else uses it and everybody would know how to change that. But because they are not only the plugins that are in the repository, there are plugins that are done by freelancers and agencies for their sites that are third-party plugins that are not in the repo, might be using it. So that backwards compatibility promise is really something that needs to, though the experimental APIs cannot be deprecated without breaking those, and they actually should need to be documented, yeah, if third party use them. But the nature of experimental API is actually not documented and can disappear at any time, but that is not possible when they're in WordPress core. So there is a solution coming out, and I think there's a lot of, we talked about it before, I'm not quite sure, on the changelog before, when for 6.0, when there were, I don't know, 280 experimental APIs that are merged at the core. Some of them are not, are really only used for the Gutenberg plugin or the block editor, but some of them were actually used in the wider ecosystem. So speaking of JavaScript library, there's the next feature is remove enzyme completely. And enzyme is a React testing library.
Yes, that's right.
Right. Yeah. And but the now React has created their own testing library. So that's why it doesn't have to be bundled anymore, right?
Yeah. I mean, we were using these two testing libraries on our components. One was enzyme and the other one is React testing library. And React testing library, which is built on top of React's own library, has its own nicer affordances, kind of encourages you to test things in a sort of more experiencing them how the user would interact with the component. So it encourages sort of better accessibility practices, etc. So it made sense to standardize towards one. So finally, after lots of work by lots of contributors, Enzyme has been removed. And now if you want to test your components, you should use React testing library.
All right. Yeah, and in the PR, there are also some code examples on how to do this for your own code, what you need to do in terms of taking out Enzyme and using React library. So check out the PR 44494. And of course, it's on the changelog for 14.3. So this concludes 14.3 and our Gutenberg plugin releases. And we come to the things that we discuss when what's still in active development, but what might come or will come to the Gutenberg plugin in the near future. And Dave, you are part of the navigation project, or almost exclusively. What is in store for the navigation project?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've just rounded off the 6.1 cycle. We're moving into thinking about 6.2. And there's been a number of priorities suggested on the navigation tracking issue, which we'll put a link to in the show notes, about what we should focus on for the 6.2 cycle for navigation in the block editor, including the navigation block. The proposal is at the moment to put a specific focus on editing and managing menus within the editor itself. Kind of sounds obvious, but previous 6.1 is kind of focused more on sort of importing menus and automatic fallback behavior, whereas this one is we're going to try and actually the editing and managing of menus themselves. So there's that. We're also going to be working on foundational issues and improving tests for better reliability and some more sort of under the hood technical changes, such as moving from IDs to slugs to when you're relating a navigation menu to a block. So we're looking for feedback on those proposals. So if anyone wants to input, please go along to that tracking issue and comment, and we'd be only too glad to hear from you.
All right. So there was at the beginning of, I think, 5.8 or something like that, there was the idea to actually have a navigation screen also for organizing menus. Is it an idea to go back to that, or is it all kind of happening in the sidebar or in a modal? Do you know what the approach is going to be? Or
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the current thinking is that having a separate navigation editor screen, as there was an experiment for that for a while in the plugin, that's now been sort of disabled. There's no plan to continue to work on that. But instead, the idea is to bring that sort of ability to manage multiple menus into the editor canvas itself. If you think about things like templates and template parts, you can sort of do that all within the editor. There's sort of focus modes for template parts, and the same thing will hopefully apply to navigation. So you'll be able to manage an individual navigation block and its associated menu within the editor, within the block itself. But also, if you have lots of other menus and you want to edit one that isn't on the canvas, for example, there will be sort of a global navigation sidebar that you can pop open from that W WordPress menu in the top left. And there you'll be able to choose the different menus and move things around, edit them, things like that. And so there's the foundational work for that should be going into 6.2. The actual screen may not appear in 6.2, but at least the foundational work will be going in to make that hat possible. So yeah, that's the state of play on that particular aspect.
Well, thank you to elaborate on that. And then there's so Andrew Sarong has also created a new tracking issue for the layout options that are going to come after 6.1. And layouts are the ones that for all the layout options, design tools, and other refinements. And 6.2, 6.1 comes with three layouts now: the flow layout, the flex layout, and the constraint layout, making it possible so the inner blocks are following their parents, so to speak, in that. But there are also additional improvements and in the works. One was the fixed positions for header and footer template parts, meaning it's kind of stuck to the top or to the bottom. Also have some more layout consistencies, like and add layout support to the cover block. Also, some minor things like allow the change block cap in the editor and all that. So I will have that link also in the show notes to that tracking issue, so you see what the team is working on and what they have on on their priority list, so you can follow along and also give input. It's really important that people test along the way so it gets a more stable version of it.
Oh, I'm excited about fixed position header and footer template parts.
Yeah.
A lot of people ask me about that for navigation,
Yeah.
so I can imagine that's
I
going to
can
come in
imagine.
handy.
So, yeah, it seems that we are at the end of our show today. And I'm so happy, Dave, that you joined me today on going through the two change logs and talk about WordPress 6.1 and all those great tools that you brought in from the community.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Is there anything else that you wanted to alert our listeners to that we didn't talk about before we close the show?
No, absolutely. I think we've covered quite a lot in this show. So no, thank you. That's
Yes, we did. So, when people want to reach you, how would they connect with you apart from the YouTube channel that we're going to put in the show notes?
sure. I think probably the best way is through WordPress Slack. I'm Get Dave on WordPress Slack. Feel free to send me a DM if you'd like to discuss anything.
Excellent. And as always, the show notes will be published on gutenbergtimes.com/podcast. This is number 74. And if you have questions and suggestions and news you want to include, send them, or you want us to include, send them to changelog@gutenbergtimes.com. Changelog@gutenbergtimes. Thanks again for listening and being part of our show. Thank you, Dave. And this is goodbye from me. Bye bye.
Bye.